that stains the hand, remember that Eve was easily tempted. Repetition. Mommy's hard hands make me dizzy and nauseous. Mommy prays and prays while my knees bite into grains of rice. Mommy repeats herself while her statue of the Virgin watches. The whole house witnesses as I pray this steep, steep price. Things you think while you're kneeling on rice that have nothing to do with repentance. I once watched my father peel an orange without once removing the knife from the fruit. He just turned and turned and turned it like a globe being skinned, the orange peel becoming a curl, the inside exposed and bleeding. How easily he separated everything that protected the fruit and then passed the bowl to my mother, dropping the skin to the floor while the inside burst between her teeth. Another thing you think while you're kneeling on rice that has nothing to do with repentance. My mother has never had soft hands. Even when I was a child, they were rough from pushing wooden mops and scrubbing tiles. But when I was little, I didn't mind. We would walk down the street, and I would rub her calluses. She would smile and say I was her premio for hard work. I was her premio for patience. And I loved being her reward, the golden trophy of her life. I just don't know when I got too big for the appointed pedestal. The last thing you think while you're kneeling on rice that has nothing to do with repentance. How you will have deep grain-sized indents on your knees. How lucky you are your jeans protect the skin from breaking. How you will be walking slow to school. How kneeling on pews was never as bad as this. How neither your father nor brother say anything. How you feel cold, but blood has rushed to your face. How your fists are clenched, but they have nothing to hit. How the stinging pain shoots up your thighs. How you've never gritted your teeth this tight. How it hurts less if you force yourself still, still, still. How pointless these thoughts are, any of them. How kissing should never hurt so much. Leaving. Twin presses a bag of frozen mixed vegetables against my knees and another against my cheek. You're lucky, you know. She's growing old. She didn't make you kneel very long. And with the sting still fresh on my skin, I'm not in a place to nod. But I know it's true. Seal, just don't get in trouble until we can leave. Soon we can leave for college. I've never heard Twin sound so desperate. Never thought he dreamed of leaving just like me. I try not to be resentful he skipped a grade and will escape sooner. I try not to be upset at his soft touch. I elbow him away, afraid of how my hands want to hurt everything around me. What do you need from me? It's such a simple question. But when Caridad texts Twin the message to show me, I look at him and hand the phone back. I'm not mad that he told her. I know they're both just worried, but all I need is to give in to what I wouldn't let myself do in front of Mommy. I curl into a ball and weep. Consequences. My mother drops the word no like 100 grains of rice. I will kneel in these too. No cell phone, no lunch money, no afternoons off from church, no boys, no texting, no hanging out after school, no freedom, no time to myself, no getting out of confession with Father Sean this Sunday. Late that night, the only person I want to talk to is Aman. And although Twin offers to let me use his phone, I don't know what I'd say. That we had a great day and that it all fell apart. That my heart hurts more than my knees, that we can't be together anymore, that I would take that beating again to be with him. Maybe there are no words to say. I just want to be held. Friday, November 9th, in front of my locker. I'm so out of it the next morning as I put my things away in my locker that I don't notice the group of guys circling near until one bumps me, both his hands palming and squeezing my ass. And I can tell by how his boys laugh, how he smirks while saying, oops, that this was not an accident. I scan the hall. Other kids have slowed down. Some girls whisper behind their hands. The group of boys laugh, begin walking away. Out of the corner of my eye, I see Amon slowing to a standstill, his smile fading. For the first time since I can remember, I wait. I can't fight today. Everything inside me feels beaten, and maybe I won't have to. Amon is here. He'll do something about it, of course. As a boy who cares about me, he's not gonna let someone touch me and make me feel so damn small inside. Of course, as someone who I've talked to about how weird it feels to be stared at and touched like public property, he'll know how much this bothers me. But Amon doesn't move. All the things I needed to tell him about last night, all the things that have changed since we last kissed on the train, evaporate in the heat of my anger. I feel my knees throbbing, the rice bruises pressing into the fabric of my sweats, and I think about how Amon is the reason I was punished in the first place. He's not going to throw a punch. He's not going to curse or throw a fit. He's not going to do a damn thing, because no one will ever take care of me but me. Pushing away from my locker, I face the dude who groped me. Push him hard in the back. He stumbles, but before he can react, I look him dead in the eye. If you ever touch me again, I'll put my nails through every pimple on your fucking face. I push my locker closed and grill Amon before walking away. That goes for you too. Thanks for nothing.
Part 3. The Voice of One Crying in the Wilderness. Silent World. All of Friday and the weekend, the world I've lived in wears masking tape over its mouth. I wear invisible Beats headphones that muffle sound. I don't hear teachers, or Father Sean, Twin, or Caridad. Amon tries to speak to me, but even in bio, I pretend my ears are cotton-filled. I speak to no one. The world is almost peaceful when you stop trying to understand it. Sunday, November 11th. Heavy. After Mass on Sunday, under Mommy's knowing eyes, I step to Father Sean. He's kissing babies and talking to old people, but he gives me his full attention. I ask to meet him for confession, and I can't tell if I imagine it, but his eyes almost seem to get soft. He glances behind me, where Mommy is standing. Instead of the confessional, he tells me to meet him in the rectory, the well-lit meeting space behind the church. And I don't know how much truth my tongue will stumble through. I walk through the side door and avoid looking at pictures of the saints. I'm always avoiding something, and it seems as heavy as any cross. My confession. How do you admit a thing like this? You would think I was pregnant the way my parents act like I let them down. And by my parents, I mean Mommy. Poppy mostly huffs around telling me I better do what Mommy says. And Mommy huffs around saying I better read Proverbs 31 more closely. And I just want to tell them it's not that deep. I don't got an STD or a baby. It was just a tongue in my mouth. So I'm not quite sure what to tell Father Sean when I meet him in the rectory. Maybe I don't remember my Bible right, but I don't think this is one of the seven sins. He sits across from me and crosses his ankles. Whenever you're ready, we can talk. I'm guessing you don't need anonymity, and I thought this would be cozier than the confessional. Do you want tea? I look at my clasped hands, because I can't look him in the face. I think I committed lust, and disobeyed my parents, although they never actually said I couldn't kiss a boy on the train, so I'm not sure if that's the right sin. I wait for Father Sean to speak, but he just stares at the picture of the Pope above me. Are you actually sorry, Siomara? I wait a moment. Then I shake my head no. Say, I'm sorry I got in trouble. I'm sorry I have to be here, that I have to pretend to you and her that I care about confirmation at all, but I'm not sorry I kissed a boy. I'm only sorry I was caught or that I had to hide it at all. Father Sean says, our God is a forgiving God. Even when we do things we shouldn't,
Our God understands the weakness of the flesh, but forgiveness is only granted if the person is actually remorseful. I think this goes much deeper than kissing a boy on the train.
Prayers. Father Sean is Jamaican. His Spanish has a funky accent, and when he gives the gospel for the Latino Mass, half the words be sounding made up. It makes the younger kids laugh. It makes our older folks smile. His Spanish, when he talks to my mother, does neither. His hazel eyes are sure and gentle when he looks at mommy and tells her, Alta gracia, I don't think Xiomara is quite ready to be confirmed. I think she has some questions we should let her answer first. He explains it's not what I confessed, but several questions I've asked and comments I've made make him think I should keep coming to classes, but not take the leap of confirmation this year. My mother's face scrunches tight, like someone has vacuumed all her joy. I avoid her eyes, but something must flash in them because Father Sean raises a hand. Alta gracia. Please be calm. Remember, anger is as much a sin as anything Xiomara may have committed. We all need time to come to terms with certain things, don't we? And I don't know if Father Sean just granted me a blessing or nailed my coffin shut. How I can tell. I can tell when mommy is really angry because her Spanish becomes faster than usual, the words bumping into one another like go-karts. Mira muchacha, you will not embarrass me in church again. From now on, you are going to fix yourself. Do you hear me, Xiomara? No te lo voy a decir otra vez. But I know she will, in fact, tell me again and again. There are going to be some big changes. Before we walk in the house. You cannot turn your back on God. I was on my journey to the convent, prepared to be his bride when I married your father. I think it was punishment. God allowed me America, but shackled me with a man addicted to women. It was punishment to withhold children from me for so long until I questioned if anyone in this world would ever love me. But even business deals are promises, and we still married in a church, and so I never walked away from him, although I tried my best to get back to my first love, and confirmation is the last step I can give you. But the child sins just like the parent, because look at you, choosing this over the sacred. I don't know if you're more like your father or more like me. My heart is a hand that tightens into a fist. It is a shrinking thing, like a raisin, like a too tight tee, like fingers that curl but have no other hand to hold them, so they just end up biting into themselves. Wednesday, November 14th. A poem mommy will never read. Mi boca no puede escribir una bandera blanca. Nunca será un verso de la Biblia. Mi boca no puede formarse el lamento que tú dices tú y Dios merecen. Tú dices que todo esto es culpa de mi boca, porque tenía hambre, porque era callada. Pero, ¿y la boca tuya? Como tus labios son grapas que me perforan rápido y fuerte, y las palabras que nunca dije quedan mejor muertas en mi lengua porque solamente hubieran chocado contra la puerta cerrada de tu espalda. Tu silencio amuebla una casa oscura, pero aún a riesgo de quemarse, la mariposa nocturna siempre busca la luz. In translation. My mouth cannot write you a white flag. It will never be a Bible verse. My mouth cannot be shaped into the apology you say both you and God deserve. And you want to make it seem it's my mouth's entire fault because it was hungry and silent. But what about your mouth? How your lips are staples that pierce me quick and hard, and the words I never say are better left on my tongue since they would only have slammed against the closed door of your back. Your silence furnishes a dark house, but even at the risk of burning, the moth always seeks the light. Heartbreak. I never meant to hurt anyone. I didn't see how I could by stealing kisses, as I whispered promises into ears that I know now weren't listening. I pretend not to see him in the hallway. I pretend not to see them at home. The ultimate actress because I'm always pretending, pretending I'm blind, pretending I'm fine. I should win an Oscar. I do it so well. Is this remorse? Is this worthy of forgiveness? Reminders. I lie in bed doing homework while Twin watches anime on YouTube. He stopped wearing his headphones so that I can listen in. It's technically breaking mommy's rules, but she would never punish Twin. Halfway through an episode, a commercial endorsed by one of last year's Winter Olympians comes on. And I must make a noise, because Twin looks over his shoulder at me. He quiets his laptop. Are you okay? But I just bury my head in my pillow and remind myself to breathe. Writing. The next day and the one after that, I spend every class writing in my journal. Miss Galliano sends me to the guidance counselor, but I refuse to talk to her either until she threatens to call home, so I make up an excuse about cramps and stress. Hiding in my journal is the only way I know not to cry. My house is a tomb. Even Twin has stopped speaking to me as if he's afraid a single word will cause my facade to crack. I hear mommy on the phone, making plans to send me to DR for the summer. The ultimate consequence, let that good old island living fix me. Every time I think about being away from home, from English, from Twin and Caridad, I feel like a ship at sea. All the possibilities to end up anywhere I want. All the possibilities to be lost. What I'd like to tell Aman when he sends another apology message. Your hands on mine were cold. Your lips near my ear were warm. Your, I'm sorry, fervent. But you have no need to apologize. I know silence well. None of this was ever about you. You were just a failed rebellion. Of course I'm lying. You were everything, but I can't have you without entering a fight I won't win. I know none of these were battles that I wanted in the first place. Wednesday, November 21st. Favors. The night before Thanksgiving, Twin pulls my headphones out, offers me a sliced-up apple and a soft smile. You haven't been eating much. I take the plate and stare at the fruit, surprised he's even noticed. I'm just not hungry. I eat everything but the seeds, because I know that Twin is worried, and I really can't resist apples. Xiomara, can I ask you a favor? Will you write a poem about love? One about being thankful that a person is in your life? I look at my brother blankly. I wonder if he knows how close he is to having his face pierced by apple seeds. Something in my gut rebels against the apple and I feel it wanting to come all the way back up my throat. For a second I think of all the poems that I wrote for Aman, but I push the thought away. I shove the plate at Twin. You want me to write a love poem for your... for white boy? Was that what this apple was all about? Twin stares at me, baffled, and then something clears on his face. He pulls my empty plate against his chest like armor. His name is Cody, and the poem was actually for you. I thought it would be cathartic to write something beautiful for yourself. Pulled back. I'm helping mommy dice potatoes and beets for her ensalada rusa when the phone rings. She answers and passes it to me, and I can't imagine who it is. Caridad's voice screeches in my ear. Listen, woman, I know you're upset. I know you got a lot going on, but don't you dare ignore me for 2 weeks straight. Just because you got your cell taken, you can't call nobody? And instead of getting angry, I actually tear up. It's such a small thing. But also so normal. Caridad never takes my shit, and she lets me know this time is no different. She sighs and her voice softens. I'm worried about you, Seal. Don't shut us out. And she can't see me nodding through the phone, but I murmur an apology and tell her I have to go, and I know she knows I'm really saying thank you. Thursday, November 22nd. On Thanksgiving. El Día de Acción de Gracias, Twin and I join mommy at church and help spoon mashed potatoes and peas and other American things we never eat at home onto homeless people's plates. I feel sick the whole day, like everyone can see that the only thing I'm thankful for is mommy's silence. Even Twin, who looks at me with his puppy dog face makes me want to overturn the table and crush all these mushy peas beneath my heel. Haiku. The best part about Thanksgiving was when mommy returned my cell until I remember I've got no one to text. Rough draft of assignment 4. When was the last time you felt free? I must have been 5 or 6 because the memory is fuzzy. But my father had been watching a karate movie on TV, and my mother was at church, so there was no one to bother us. Twin and I tied long sleeve t-shirts around our heads and used the bows from my church dresses to tie like karate sashes around our waists. We thought this made us look like ninjas, and we hopped from couch to couch, sliding off the plastic sofa covers but never landing in the lava. Why we were ninjas in volcanoes? Who knows? I remember at one point looking up and seeing my mother in the living room doorway. I flung myself at her. There was freedom there, in flying, in believing I'd be caught. I can't remember if she did catch me, but she must have, or wouldn't I remember falling? Rough draft of assignment 4. When was the last time you felt free? Maybe the last time I was happy saying a poem, with a man listening to me. Eyes half closed, the moment right before I opened my mouth, when I was nervous and my heart thumped fast, but I knew I could do it anyway, that I could say something, anything in this moment, and someone was going to listen. Rough draft of assignment 4. When was the last time you felt free? Can a stoop be a place of freedom? I feel like any time I sat on a stoop, I could just watch the world without it watching me too closely. Over the summer, it feels like years ago, the downstairs stoop was a playground. It was a moment when I could breathe without anyone asking me to do or be anything other than what I was, a girl, an almost woman, sitting in the sunshine and enjoying the warmth. Dudes don't bother you too much when you're sitting on your own apartment stoop. When I sat on the stoop with the boy I thought really cared for me, there was freedom then, too, in the way our bodies leaned toward each other, in the fact that I'd finally let myself be reckless. There is freedom in coming and going for no other reason than because you can. There is freedom in choosing to sit and be still when everything is always telling you to move, move fast. Final draft of assignment 4. What I actually turn in. Xiomara Batista, Tuesday, December 4th, Miss Galliano, last time you felt free, final draft. Freedom is a complicated word. I've never been in prison like Nelson Mandela or some people I grew up with. I've never been in cage like a Rottweiler used for dog fights or like the roosters my parents grew up tending. Freedom seems like such a big word, something too big. Maybe like a skyscraper I've glimpsed from the foot of the building, but never been invited to climb. Gone. Even lunch has now become another place I absolutely hate. A group of boys has started stopping by our quiet table, trying to squeeze in next to us, or look at what the girls are drawing, or trying to sneak peeks at my notebook. These are boys from some of my classes. Some even smoke with a man. Sometimes the teacher on duty notices. If it's Miss Galliano, I'm safe. If it's not, I have to hope it's another teacher who gives a damn about the quiet girls in the corner. I can't afford any more trouble. So I keep my hands in my lap. I keep my mouth zippered shut. And every day, I wish I could just become a disappearing act. Monday, December 10th. Zeros. When Miss Galliano returns assignment 4, I'm expecting a red zero by my name. But instead, there's a note. Xiomara, is everything okay? Let's talk after class. I've noticed your workmanship seems less thoughtful than usual, and you failed another quiz. See me. I try to think of the ways I can sneak out unnoticed. I have nothing to say to Miss Galliano or anyone else. I fold the assignment sheet into small, small squares until I can squeeze it like a fortune, tightly held in the center of my palm. Possibilities.
Miss Galliano is sneaky. Before the bell rings, she calls me to her desk and asks me to stand with her while she dismisses the other students. And she doesn't even try to ease into the conversation neither. What's going on? You aren't submitting assignments and you're even quieter than usual. But I don't have anything to tell her. If nothing else, my family believes in keeping las cosas de la casa en la casa. What happens in-house stays in-house. So I just shrug. What about poetry club? I keep expecting you to show up. Your writing is so good, you wouldn't even have to read. Maybe you just come and listen, see how you feel? I almost tell her I have a confirmation class that the times overlap. But then I remember, Father Sean isn't expecting me to show up anymore. And well, Mommy is. Who would know I'm skipping as long as I'm there when she picks me up? Plus, I have so much bursting to be said, and I think I'm ready to be listened to. I swallow back the smile that tries to creep onto my face, but tell Miss Galliano, I'll redo the assignment if I can, and I'll see you at the club tomorrow. Can't tell me nothing. I don't know the last time I looked forward to something. The afternoons with Amon seem so long ago. We're in a new unit now, and Mr. Bildner has changed our lab partners. I'm with a girl named Marcy who doodles hearts over and over in her notebook. Sometimes I catch Amon looking at me from across the room. Long looks that stretch the physical space between us. And although I'm still angry that he didn't stand up for me, a part of me feels like maybe I messed up too. But even if I wanted to fix it, there's really no reason why. He and I can't have anything to do with each other. Looking back, maybe we had a parasitic relationship, one of us taking and the other only trying to stay afloat. Maybe it's better we ended, because what can I give him? Nothing but infrequent kisses, nothing but half-done poems, nothing but sneaking around and regret at all my lying. Nothing. But at least there's tomorrow. At least there's poetry. Tuesday, December 11th. Isabel. Ain't you the big body freshman all the boys always talking about? I look at the only other person in Miss Galliano's room. A girl in a pink tutu and Jordans who must be some kind of mixed. Despite my sweaty hands and racing heart, I almost laugh. I don't know why I thought Poetry Club would be any different than the rest of the world. I shrug. I'm actually a sophomore. She cocks her head at me and pats the seat next to her. I'm Isabel. Who would have thought you was a poet? Dope. First Poetry Club meeting. It's funny how the smallest moments are like dominoes lining up, being stacked with the purpose of knocking you on your ass. In a good way. I should be tight over Isabel's comment. Instead, I like how straight up she is. Most people talk about me behind my back, but she says whatever's on her mind. I don't want to get excited, because who knows if I'll even come back. But it seems Miss Galliano's small stack of posters called a cute little mix of people. We are four in total, a small club, two boys, Chris, who did a poem in my class before handing out flyers, and Stefan, who's super quiet, then Isabel from the Bronx. Miss Galliano welcomes me to the club and asks everyone to read a poem as a way for them to introduce themselves to me. Chris and Isabel have theirs memorized, but Stefan reads from his notebook. My hands are shaking even before it's my turn, and I just keep hoping somehow I'll be skipped. Stefan's poetry is filled with the most colorful images, each line a fired visual landing on target. I don't always understand every line, but love the pictures being painted behind my eyelids. Chris Hodges is loud, a mile-a-minute talker, a comment for every poem. Everything is deep, and wow. His own poem using words like abyss and effervescent. I think he's studying for the SAT. And then there's Isabel Pedemonte Riley. Her piece rhymes and she sounds like a straight-up rapper. You can tell she loves Nicki Minaj, too. That girl's a storyteller, writing a world you're invited to walk into. I sit wondering how writing can bring such strange strangers into the same room. And then it's my turn to read. Nerves. I open my mouth, but can't push the words out. It's not like when I read to Amon. Although I wanted him to like it, I didn't feel like I had to impress him. But right now, I'm nervous, and the poem doesn't feel done yet, or like a poem at all, just a journal entry. A fist tightens in my stomach, and I take a breath trying to unclench it.
I've never imagined an audience for my work. If anything, my poems were meant to be seen and not heard. The room is so quiet, and I clear my throat. Even my pause sounds too loud. Isabel speaks up. You got this, girl. Just let us hear every word. Miss Galliano nods, and Stefan gives a soft, mm-hmm. And so I grip my notebook tight and launch into the piece. When I'm done, Isabel snaps, and Miss Galliano smiles. And of course, Chris has a comment about my poem's complex narrative structure or something like that. I can't remember the last time people were silent while I spoke, actually listening. Not since Amon, but it's nice to know I don't need him in order to feel listened to. My little words feel important for just a moment. This is a feeling I could get addicted to. Compliments. You did a great job today, Xiomara. I know it isn't always easy to put yourself out there like that, Miss Galliano says. And although I'm used to compliments, they're rarely ever about my thoughts. So I can't stop the smile that springs onto my face. I make sure to swallow it before it blooms too big. But it feels like an adult has finally really heard me. And for the first time since the incident, I feel something close to happiness. And I want to stay and talk to the other kids or to Miss Galliano, but when I look up at the clock, I know I have to rush to church or Mommy will know that I skipped out. So instead, I just say, thank you, and leave without looking back. Caridad is standing outside the church. C. Confirmation let out early. Your mother's inside saying a prayer. I told her you were using the bathroom. X. Shit, I'm sorry. I know you hate lying to her. C. It's okay, Xiomara, but listen, you were mad lucky Father Sean went straight to the rectory after class. X. I know. He would have blown up my whole spot. C. Are you dealing with that boy again? X. Actually, I was with two boys and a girl. Oh my God, you look like you might pass out. I was at a poetry club meeting. There were other kids there. Relax. C. You almost gave me a heart attack. Speaking of poetry, I heard about an open mic happening this Friday. We haven't had a social activity in a while. Down to go with me? X. I can't go, Caridad. You know Mommy won't let me. I'm still in trouble. C. She'll let you go, as long as it's with me and Xavier. Hope is a thing with wings. Although I doubt it, hope flies quick into my body's corners. Thursday, December 13th. Here. Although Mommy still huffs like a dragon at home, and Amon has stopped trying to say I'm sorry, and Twin seems sadder and sadder every day, and my silence feels like a leash being yanked in all directions, I actually raise my hand in English class and answer Miss Galliano's question, because at least here with her, I know my words are okay. Haikus. Cafeterias do not seem like safe places. Better to chill, hide. I skipped the lunchroom. Instead, I sit, write haikus inside bathroom stalls. Haikus are poems. They have three lines, follow rules of 5-7-5. Traditionally, contrasting ideas are tied together neat. I'm like a haiku with different sides, except no clean tie. I count syllables using my fingers to help until the bell rings. Offering. I gather my thoughts and things when the bathroom door flings open. Head down, I begin rushing out when I hear the high-pitched voice. Hey, X. I look up to see Isabel in a denim shirt and another frilly-ass skirt. Her curly blonde fro with a mind of its own frames her stare. Tell me you ain't eat lunch in the bathroom. I clear my half-eaten lunch off the tray and into the trash. Without a word, reach for the door. Just because I saw you at poetry club doesn't mean we're homies, is what I don't say, but want to. Isabel puts a gentle hand on my shoulder. That hand stops me in my tracks. X, I go into the photography room during lunch to eat and work on writing. It's quiet on this end of the floor, and the art teacher lets me chill. Come through if you'd like. Holding Twin.
I click the front door closed and reach for the house phone to call Mommy so she knows I'm in on time. But I feel Twin's loud sob shake me to my bones. I drop my bag at the door and rush to the bedroom where Twin is curled on my bed, crying into a stuffed elephant. And for once, I'm glad we don't need words. I brush his curls and sit beside him, and I know something has happened with the red-haired boy. Did you get in another fight? I ask and shake him hard. Was it Cody? Was he the one that hit you before? But even through his tears, Twin looks at me like I'm crazy. No, he didn't hit me. Cody would never. That black eye was just some idiot in gym. This is so much worse. Cody. Twin's story comes out in pieces. He met Cody's family last week when his parents dropped him off at school. Apparently they love Twin, who wouldn't, and wanted him to come over for dinner. Parents being accepting of sexuality seems all kinds of bizarre to me, because the thought of what my parents would do if they knew makes every bone in my body hurt. It seems perfect, Twin says. Finally, a person and place and family that accept him for who he is. But it turns out Cody's father is being relocated for his job after winter break, and Cody thinks long distance will be too hard. So he broke it off with Twin, and seems to have cracked something inside him in the process. I hold Twin close to me and rock him back and forth. Us Batista twins have no luck with love. You would have thought we'd be smarter guarding our hearts. Problems. Twin can't stop shaking, his whole skinny body trembling, and he's breathing so hard his glasses keep fogging up. I take them off his face and pat his back, tell him we'll figure this out together, that with a bit more time and space, it'll all feel clearer. I glance at the clock. You need to calm down a bit. Mommy will be home soon. Shit. Mommy, I forgot to call her. Dominican Spanish lesson. Brava, feminine ending, adjective, meaning fierce, ferocious, mad-tempered, as in, Mommy was mad brava when she came home because I hadn't called her, and even more so when she saw Twin crying and thought I had done something to him. As in, I became brava, Twin didn't correct her. I think he was too busy biting back sobs, and the last thing I'm going to do right now is correct Mommy on anything. As in, we are both brava. She's already threatening to send me to DR after winter break instead of during the summer. The last thing I need to do is get on her bad side. As in, she was so brava, her whole face shook, and she began praying underneath her breath. Then she just pointed to the bathroom, and I knew she meant for me to clean it. Permission. When Caridad calls later that night, Mommy listens to her talk on the phone. And although Mommy sounds all nice, she keeps shooting me the shadiest looks. Finally, she says, Está bien. Fine. I can go with Caridad to a poetry event, but only if Twin comes along too. I am sure convincing him will be tough. His eyes are so swollen from crying, he's had to lie to my parents and tell them he rubbed his eyes after a chemistry lab gone wrong. But when I mention the open mic night, he must want any excuse not to think of Cody, because he quickly agrees to come along. Friday, December 14th. Open mic night. The legendary New Yorican Poets Cafe is not close to Harlem. It takes us 2 trains and a walk in the brick-ass cold to get there, and when we do, the line to get in is halfway down the block. Not even nightclubs around the way look half as packed as this. The cafe is dimly lit, with paintings on the wall. The host is a statuesque black woman with a bright red flower in her hair. When she calls out the names on her list, I'm surprised to hear my own. Signed up. Caridad tells me she signed me up to perform, and immediately my hands start shaking. I've got to get out of here right now. But Caridad is having none of it. She just grabs my arm, and Twin pulls me along with the other. You got this, Seal. But every time someone gets on stage, I compare myself to them. Is my poem going to make people say, or snap? What if nobody claps? Some of the poets are so, so good. They make the audience laugh. They make me almost cry. They use their bodies and faces and know just how to talk into the mic. The host keeps the show moving, and as another person gets off stage, I know my name is creeping up her list until her clear, crisp voice calls out, Xiomara, and I'm frozen stiff. I think she's shy, y'all. Someone told me she's an open mic newbie. Keep clapping, keep clapping, keep clapping until she gets to the stage. And so now, not only am I frozen stiff, I'm also blushing and breaking into a sweat, but somehow I'm on my feet, and then the lights bright on my face make me double blink hard, and the cafe that seemed so small before feels like it has a Madison Square Garden-sized audience now. I have never experienced a silence like this. 100 people waiting, waiting for me to speak, and I don't think I can do it. My hands are shaking too much, and I can't remember the first line of the poem, just a big-ass blank yawning in my memory. My heart dribbles hard in my chest, and I look at the nearest exit, at the stairs leading to the stage. The mic is open, and the first line clicks. I say it, my voice trembling. I clear my throat. I take a breath. I begin the poem all over again. I forget the comparisons, I forget the nerves, I let the words fill the room, I let the words carry me away. People watch, they listen, and when I'm done saying a poem I've practiced in my mirror, they clap. And it sounds so loud that I want to cover my ears, cover my face. Two poets perform after me, but I don't hear a word with my heart in my ears. Caridad squeezes my hand, and Twin, looking happy for a moment, whispers, "You killed that shit." But it's not until we're leaving when the host grabs me by the arm and says, "You did that. You should come to this youth slam I'm hosting in February. I think it'd be really powerful." That's when I know I can't wait to do this again. Invitation. The slam the host tells me about is the same one that Miss Galliano has mentioned at Poetry Club. And I'm not the type to believe everything is a sign or whatever, but when so many parts of my life all point in one direction, it's hard not to follow the arrows. Even when I'm home, my hands are still shaking, and I try not to appear as overwhelmed as I feel. For the first time in a long time, Twin doesn't look sad or distracted. He just keeps turning to me in our room, his face glowing. "Xiomara, that was amazing. Although I've never been drunk or high, I think it must feel like this. Off balance, giggly, unreal. I know exactly what Twin means, because so many of the poems tonight felt a little like our own stories, like we saw and were seen. And how crazy would it be if I did that for someone else?" Sunday, December 16th. All the way hype. The whole weekend I relive the open mic. Saturday and Sunday I have to bite back my excitement. I write between cleaning. I write instead of doing homework. I write before and after church on Sunday. I can't wait for Poetry Club. Going there was like being tested in fire. It helped me to be brave, so I can't wait to tell them about the new yo. Late into the night I write and the pages of my notebook swell from all the words I've pressed onto them. It almost feels like the more I bruise the page, the quicker something inside me heals. Tuesday has become my equivalent to Mommy Sunday, a prayer circle. Monday, December 17th. At lunch on Monday. I go to the art room, and Isabel is there with headphones and a journal and a bag of spicy Doritos. I sit across the long table from her and open my notebook. Suddenly she looks up and slides the huge headphones off. "Tell me what you think." She starts reading, her hands fluttering in the air. I put my apple down to focus because this feels like an important moment. When she's done, she doesn't look at me. And Isabel isn't the type not to look at someone. I don't tell her it's good, even though it is. I don't tell her it's beautiful, although it's that too. "That gave me chills," I say. "I felt it here." I say, "You should finish it," I say, and when she smiles at me, I smile back. Tuesday, December 18th, at Poetry Club. I let everyone know I went to an open mic. They seem amazed, ask me for details, tell me they want to go along the next time I perform, and I feel such a rush at the way Isabel grabs my hand and squeals, the way Miss Galliano smiles like I did something to make her proud. How did you do? Chris asks. I shrug. I didn't suck. And everyone smiles because they know that means I killed it. Every day after English class, Miss Galliano asks me to read her something new. With 5 minutes between classes, I know I need to pick the best and shortest pieces in advance. But every day I pick a new poem and I have learned to slow down, to breathe, to pace myself, to show emotion. The last day before winter break, Miss Galliano tells me I'm really blossoming. And I think about what it means to be a closed bud, to become open. And even though it's cliche, it's also perfect. When I see Stefan in the hallway, he reads me his latest haiku. When I see Chris on my way to the train, he always has a smile for me and a, "What's up, X? Write anything new?" And I know that I'm ready to slam, that my poetry has become something I'm proud of. The way the words say what I mean, how they twist and turn language, how they connect with people, how they build community. I finally know that all of those I'll never, ever, ever stemmed from being afraid, but not even they can stop me. Not anymore. Monday, December 24th. Christmas Eve. My mother doesn't buy a Christmas tree. Instead, she buys 3 big poinsettias and sets them on a red tablecloth on the living room windowsill. Noche Buena, the good night, has always been one of my favorite holidays. On TV, white families always open gifts on Christmas Day, but most Latinos celebrate the night before. During the day, Caridad comes over, bringing her mother's famous coquito that's laced with a little bit of rum. We play video games with Twin and exchange cards we made for each other. Mommy has always made Twin and me go to the midnight mass to celebrate baby Jesus, and when we get back, we've been allowed to open gifts. This year, when we get home from church, I go straight to my room. I know better than to expect anything. I lie in bed with Chance the Rapper in my ear when there's a knock on the door. I look, imagining it's Twin trying to be respectful. Except it's not. Mommy stands there, with a small wrapped box in her hand. She shuffles into the room, sets the gift on the desk, and like she doesn't know what to do with her hand, she picks up Twin's sweater from the computer chair and neatly refolds it. When she sits, I sit up in bed, unsure of what to do, but just as fast as she sits down, she stands, gestures to the gift, and walks to the door. I had it resized for you. I know how much you like jewelry. It's a rosary, I think, before I open the box. My mother doesn't believe in any other kind of jewelry. But when I lift the lid, I see a small gold plaque with my name etched on it, a thin gold chain making the bracelet complete. And I know I've seen this plaque before. When I turn it over, I remember where. Inscribed on the inside are 2 Spanish words, mi hija. This was my baby bracelet. Mommy must have kept it all these years. But why she resized it now makes absolutely no sense. I lay it across my wrist and cinch the clasps closed. Her daughter on one side, myself on the other, and I feel so many things, but mostly relief that it wasn't a rosary. Wednesday, December 26th to Tuesday, January 1st. Longest week. The week after Christmas is the longest week of my life. I write and I write and I read poems to Twin, who is still in his feelings and refusing to talk to me about Cody, but I see him texting Caridad, who's the most sympathetic of us all, so probably a good decision. I read the poems so often and edit so much that I begin memorizing them by accident, until my head is full of words and stories, until I'm practicing the poems in my dreams. And the more I write, the braver I become. I write about mommy, about feeling like an aunt, about boys trying to always holler at me, about Amon, about Twin. Sometimes I'm still awake writing when mommy gets up at the ass crack of dawn to go to work. So many words fill my notebook, and I can't wait to share them all. But still another week to go until poetry club. Wednesday, January 2nd. The Waiting Game. Because of New Year's, we don't start school again until Wednesday. So I miss poetry club by just one day. Although I'm disappointed, the extra week gives me more time to write. Isabel and I share some poems during lunch, and if I catch Stefan or Chris in the hallways, we'll joke or talk about a new piece. With my birthday in a week, I realize that this new year hasn't started off so bad. Tuesday, January 8th. Birthdays. On our birthday, Twin and I exchanged gifts in the morning, right before we leave for school. I got him an X-Men comic, issue 17. Although it's not his usual anime, Twin tears up when he sees it. Iceman, the main character in it, is a super dope gay mutant. I hug him awkwardly, and before he pulls away, I don't know if I told you, but I'm on your side. Always. Twin gives me a tight hug and hands me a wrapped package. I break open the tape and see the leather cover. It's another notebook, so similar to my first. Ran out of gift ideas? I tease. He shakes his head and nods at my old notebook, fat and falling apart on the kitchen table. No, and your old one is so full, I know you haven't either. We pack up and walk arm in arm to the train. Today will be a good day. The good. Caridad has left me 5 voicemails singing happy birthday. They are ridiculous and her voice is horrible, but I laugh every time. I'm sure she's trying to get up to 16 by the end of the day. When I go put away my bio textbook before lunch, an envelope flutters to the ground. Inside, I find a printed out receipt for 2 admission tickets to an apple farm just north of the Bronx. Only one person at this school knows how much I love apples. Aman. A laugh uncurls in my throat and stretches its way to my lips. By the time poetry club comes around, I'm walking on air. Before Stefan pulls me into the classroom, Chris takes off his fitted and croons, "Happy Birthday," the Stevie Wonder version. Isabel hands me a cupcake. Miss Galliano gives me a wink. I think I will remember this birthday for the rest of my life. The bad. When we start going around the room to read our poems, I reach into my bag. I find the new journal Twin gave me, but after searching and searching, I realize I must have left my old one on the kitchen table. For a moment, I feel so anxious. All those poems I wrote over break, and I don't even have one to share. But I try from memory. One of my favorites rolls off my tongue as if I planned it that way. It feels so good to do a new poem, and so good to listen to Chris, Stefan, and Isabel. And when I finally look at the clock, I realize I'm running late to church. At some point, Mommy will find out I haven't been going to confirmation classes. Probably when the class is confirmed and I don't have an excuse for poetry club anymore. But for now, I'm gonna keep fronting. I just need to get to church before she's waiting outside. I grab my bag in a hurry, leave with a quick wave, not my usual goodbye, and zip my North Face up tight. I grab my phone to shoot Caridad a text and see I have 2 missed calls. My mother's voicemail spears ice into my bones. Te estoy esperando en casa. Click. The ugly. I'm breathing hard by the time I get home. I ran from the train and my face is flushed. I glance at the kitchen table before hurrying to my room. My notebook isn't there. Mommy is sitting on the edge of my bed with my journal cradled between her hands. When she looks at me, I feel blood rush from my cheeks. I hear a baseball game in the living room, but I know neither Papi nor Twin can save me. My hands pulse to grab the book from her, but I don't move from the doorway. She speaks softly. You think I don't know enough English to figure out you talk about boys and church and me? To know all these terrible things you think? My mother has always seemed like a big woman, even though she's so much smaller than I am. This moment, when she swells up and stands, I shrink in the eyes of her wrath. These thoughts you have, that you would write them for the people to read without feeling guilt, shame. What kind of daughter of mine are you? She seems lost, as if I've yanked an anchor from the only thing that's kept her afloat. She grabs a book in one hand, and it's then that I notice the box of matches. The box that's always on the stove. The one that's sitting on my bed. I don't know what an asthma attack feels like. But it has to be like this, like claws reaching into your chest and snatching sharply every bit of air, leaving you breathless and wounded before you know what's happened. She's lit the match. Let me explain. I tell her that no one sees the words, that they are just my personal thoughts, that it helps for me to write them down, that they are private, that she wasn't supposed to ever read my poems, that I'm sorry, that I'm sorry, that I'm sorry, and I'm digging my fingers into the doorframe. It's the only thing holding me up, holding me back. My anger wants to become a creature with teeth and nails, but I keep it collared because this is my mother, and I am sorry that she found it, that I wrote it, that I ever thought my thoughts were mine. She holds the lit match up to a corner of my notebook. Get a trash can, Xiomara. I don't want ashes on my floor. If your hand causes you to sin, if your hand causes you to sin, if your eye causes you to sin, if this notebook, this writing causes you to sin, the smell of burning leather propels me. I push from the doorway and reach for her hand. Hundreds of poems, I think. Years and years of writing. She turns before I can get my hand on the notebook, shoves her elbow hard into my chest, recites the words loud again and again. If your hand causes you to sin, if your eye causes you to sin, if this notebook, this writing causes you to sin, and for the first time in my life, I understand the word desperate. How it's a pointed hunger in the belly. Please, please, please. She holds me off with the lit match, but I make another grab and the smoking book falls to the floor. We both reach for it, and just as my fingers grace the cover, feel the etched woman on the leather, my mother slaps me back hard onto my ass. The Christmas bracelet rattles to the floor. But as I breathe near the door, my cheek stinging, all I can do is watch the pages burn. And as she recites scripture, words tumble out of my mouth too. All of the poems and stanzas I've memorized spill out, getting louder and louder, all out of order, until I'm yelling at the top of my lungs, heaving the words like weapons from my chest. They are the only thing I can fight back with. Verses. I'm where the X is marked. I arrived battle ready. Dios te salve, María. Llena eres de gracia. I am the indication. I sign myself across the line. El Señor es contigo. Bendita tú eres entre todas las mujeres. The X I am is an armored dress I clothe myself in every morning. Y bendito es el fruto de tu vientre, Jesús. My name is hard to say, and my hands are hard too. I raised them here to build the church of myself. This X was always an omen. Santa María, Madre de Dios, ruega por nosotros pecadores, ahora y en la hora de nuestra muerte. Amén. Burn. Mommy stares at me like I'm speaking in tongues and continues praying. We are wild women, flinging verses at each other like grenades in a battlefield, a cacophony of violent poems. And then we are both gasping, wordless, tears roll down our cheeks, but mine aren't from the smoke. I cough on my own tongue. I've never mourned something dying before this moment. I have no more poems. My mind blanks. A roar tears from my mouth. Burn it. Burn it. This is where the poems are, I say, thumping a fist against my chest. Will you burn me? Will you burn me too? You would burn me, wouldn't you, if you could? Where there is smoke. I'm not sure when Papi and Twin tuned in, but I feel Twin rush past me. He reaches for the notebook, but Mommy hisses at him to step back and stomps on the smoking pages. Papi is in the room. He speaks softly to my mother, saying her name over and over. Altagracia, Altagracia. When he reaches for the book, she hisses at him too, but he is soft with her, approaching a frothing pit bull. He bends and grabs the book by a corner and tugs. When she lets go, he knocks it against the wall, trying to put out the burning leather, yells at Twin to get the fire extinguisher. Can a scent tattoo itself onto your memory? That's a mixed metaphor, isn't it?
My book is smoldering. My heart feels like it's been burned crisp, and all I can think about are mixed metaphors. Things you think about in the split second your notebook is burning. If I were on fire, who could I count on to water me down? If I were a pile of ashes, who could I count on to gather me in a pretty urn?